Welcome to Book of Boredom Podcast, reading and roasting the Book of Mormon cover to cover. We still haven't got to the back cover yet, but we're getting there. And when we get there, well, I guess maybe we'll have to think of something else to do. We also roast Mormonism in general on this podcast, and today we bring to you the 29th installment of Roasting Saints, where we take a history podcast released by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and mock it, roast it. Are we good at this? I guess the results are debatable. I can't seem to make my roommate laugh very much, and I'm here today with my good internet friend, Jones.
Hello.
And at the beginning of the episode, we usually talk about some Mormon news, because there's always some kind of horseshit happening.
Today is Saturday, April 18th, 2026. Here's the bullshit that's been happening in the world of Mormonism.
The church had a general conference recently.
Yes. Actually, it was first weekend in April. That's when it usually is. I know that my darling wife listened to some recaps and stuff like that. And all I said is like, well, did anything happen that's going to make life here in Utah more unpleasant? And she's like, nope. And I was like, all right. So I am to the point where I try to avoid absolutely everything having to do with Mormonism if I can help it. The only thing that I really care about is if they do something even more horrendous than the shit they've already done. But no, it apparently, according to my wife, was pretty much just like every conference where they said nothing for 2 days.
So did I hear something about the church making Sunday services shorter?
That actually happened last month. Again, I try to avoid this shit, but it's all over the goddamn... It has to do something with, like, they were alternating having priesthood 1 week and Relief Society another week, which was a change from the way they've been doing it ever since they stopped doing them on separate days during the week. Because it used to be you'd have to go to church 3 days a fucking week, because one was for sacrament meeting, one was for priesthood, and one was for Sunday school. And then back in the 50s, 60s, I don't give a shit, sometime back way before I was born, they combined it. So it was an hour and a half of sacrament on Sunday, and then you had, you know, 45 minutes of the other activities 2 other days a week. Then in the 50s, they threw it all together just on Sunday so that you had to go to church for 3 fucking hours. They kept that all the way until COVID. And they're like, we're losing people. Well, maybe it's because church is too long.
Right, it is too long. But is that really the reason people aren't turning up to church?
No, it's not addressing any of the real issues.
Some of those evangelicals have some fucking long services, but I guess when you're singing and dancing the Holy Ghost hop, it makes the time fly.
So they cut it down to 2 hours. I'm assuming they must have cut down sacrament because it was after I left. So they had sacrament, which is a thing you do every week where you symbolically cannibalize your God. And then it was like 1 week you would have priesthood / Relief Society, the gendered groups, while your kids were in Sunday school or something. And then the next week it would be Sunday school for the adults. But then they kept losing people. So they were like, we'll bring it back, I guess. And I don't give a fuck what the rationale was. It's like, so fucking what?
So what I read on the ex-Mormon subreddit was that, yeah, they made the whole thing shorter, but they kept the most boring part, which is that sacrament service where you cannibalize your Lord. That's the same length. They didn't make that any shorter.
As a person that went to church for 40 years, it was all boring. So fucking bored. And paradoxically, it's also the most anxiety-inducing thing in the entire world. But maybe that's only for autistic people who can't handle loud screaming babies.
Oh, you've never sounded more neurotypical, Jones. Who would show up for that? I wouldn't be able to handle it. Screaming anything, just like, I would go. I'd just leave. You're not going to yell in my ear hole and have me just sit there. I'm just not going to do that. Oh, hang on. I work at a call center. I guess that is pretty much exactly what I do.
Well, religion loves miserable people, because when you're miserable, you seek after something that doesn't exist to fix your misery. So if the thing that's making you miserable is also telling you that you have to continue going there or you're going to burn in hell or outer darkness or whatever, I guess that works just fine for them.
So apparently they're not announcing temple developments in general conference anymore. So consequently, there were no temple announcements in this last general conference.
Yes, because what's his bucket?
Oaks?
No, the last guy. I'm so happy I can't fucking remember his name.
Oh, Rusty.
Russell M. Nelson. Thanks, patient. Now I remember the fucker's name. The fact is he way overextended the church announcing all these temples, which 90% of them were not even beyond a twinkle in his quickly degrading mind.
I mean, I know the church is rich, but how are they going to afford the upkeep on all of this property that doesn't make them any money?
We've got this huge list of the temples that they were going to be building, and 10% of them maybe actually will be built. So, yeah, I think if they're saying, oh, we won't announce them during conferences so that people don't go, hey, you announced this temple like 15 years ago. They haven't even fucking gotten land to build this temple on. Maybe these guys are full of shit. They're just going to let it fade into distant memory, and then they'll act like, no, we never said we're going to build a temple in Russia. What do you mean there's a fucking recording of us saying that? No, that's AI. There's another piece of Mormon news that I am aware of. I don't know if you've heard of. The presidency of the Sunday school, they are now allowing women to be called as president with a big fat fucking caveat. If a woman is called as president, her counselors can't be men. They have to be women. I'm not sure what excuse they have, but the reason is...
because in Mormonism, you can't have a woman over a man.
Exactly. You can't have a woman over a man.
Unless it's in the bedroom.
Actually, no. Thank you very much. I mean, I don't know how much you heard about it, but like back in the late 60s, the first presidents came out saying all the things you could not do in sex.
Even when married and straight.
Yeah.
I mean, how much more boring can they make it?
Oh, I mean, blowjobs, oral sex, like positions, everything.
Why does everything they focus on have to do with sex?
And there was such a fucking uproar because we were like, hey, I like it when I get a blowjob. I like it when my wife sticks her thumb up my ass or whatever. That just like what they're going to do with the temples, they said nothing and it just faded off.
Such a non-issue, Jesus.
You know, like if you had to go in and be interviewed by the bishop, they would question you about how you were fucking as a couple. And then they said, just don't ask them anymore. So they never disavowed it. They stopped doing it and let it fall into the memory hole.
Memory hole.
But anyway, so people are like, oh, look, we give women in our church so much authority. We're like, yeah, only if they're having authority over other people we decide count as female, but they cannot have any power or authority over the power of the priesthood penis people.
By the power of the priesthood penis people. In other churches, no one ever uses that term Sunday school for a group of adults studying the Bible. That's always the child-minding service that happens during church, because church is boring. It's too boring for kids to put up with. They may want to change that if they ever want to be seen to be one of the other Christian sects out there.
They're working so hard to fit in with the rest of the Christian nationalists that are destroying the country. But the thing is, once the Christian nationalists have gotten rid of all the atheists and all the queers and all the brown people and humanists, they're going to go after the weird people who aren't actually Christian. Mormons are going to be one of the very first in groups that get kicked out after they've gotten rid of all the other groups. And Mormons are saying, but we're Christian the entire time. And Christians have been saying, no, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not. Idiots. Fucking idiots.
So apparently Mormonism really embraced Easter this year in an uncharacteristic way.
Oh, it was fucking everywhere. They had banners outside of every fucking church with a big picture of Jesus coming out of the tomb saying, come celebrate Easter with us. Come worship Jesus with us. The thing about Mormonism is we didn't worship Jesus. We revere Jesus as our way to God, because Jesus and God are separate, but you don't worship Jesus, you worship God. Now, fuck it, we're worshiping Jesus. And here's the other thing. When Easter officially is, that was when we were having conference. So people would be, oh, I'm going to go to the Mormon church on Easter. They'd show up. Nobody's there because they're at their house fucking watching conference. We celebrated Easter a week away from when the calendar says Easter was. So when there's a banner outside church that says, come worship with us on Easter, they mean the Mormon Easter because we have to go to conference on the regular Easter.
So what was on these Easter banners that they put up?
If I recall, it was words, a picture of Jesus coming out of the tomb, and maybe a QR code.
A QR code.
Well, it was probably a QR code to something about have the missionaries contact me or something.
Oh my God, there's a QR code you shouldn't scan.
Yeah, exactly.
Living proof that not all QR codes are good for you. They need a propaganda filter on those.
Yeah, I'm so surrounded by Mormonism here in Utah that I do my best not to look at it. You know, I mean, every night when I go to bed, every morning when I wake up, I see a big fucking temple right outside my window. I can't avoid it. It's lit up 24/7.
No, Jones, you've got to get your description right. You called it a fuck-all temple.
Yes, a big fuck-all temple. And every two blocks is a Mormon church. Hell, in our town, they're just completing a stake center, which is like the area main church. And literally across the street is another church that's been there for about 10 years.
How does that make fiscal sense?
Because A, they're keeping up appearances. B, one of the few places the church is actually growing in the States is here in Utah County. Because Mormons keep fucking, even though the headquarters is up in Salt Lake City. Down here is where the hardcore Mormons are. It's where BYU is at and all that stuff. Basically, Utah is one large urban sprawl from Spanish Fork, which is like 40 miles south of me, all the way up north of Ogden, which is about 60 miles north of me. So it's just city. Used to be that they were all these separate communities along the Wasatch Front, the mountain range east of us. They can't go onto the mountains because it's too steep. They can grow only so far to the west before they either hit desert or they hit Salt Lake or Utah Lake or the Okra Mountains. The geology has constrained the growth of the city so that it's just spread out into one another.
I wonder if we can blame the urban sprawl for how boring the secret lives of Mormon wives is.
Oh, yeah, I don't get it. My wife has watched the entire fucking series.
Jones, we should get your wife on the podcast.
Yeah, she'll be Sister Jones, Captain Jones, Big Boss Jones.
We could save Sisters Gigi and Divchina the trauma of having to tell us all about this show. I mean, Gigi hasn't even watched it all yet.
Like, I'll come into the room and she'll be watching. I'm like, I'm out. I can't watch reality TV shows. And she loves it. Like, she'll watch Ink Masters. I can't stand that, even though I think tattoos are cool. It's so contrived and bullshit. And she's like, I know it is, but she enjoys it.
Maybe it's just like me and competition cooking shows.
Oh, she was watching this Korean cooking show on Netflix.
It's called Culinary Class Wars.
Yeah, that's what it was. And she was watching it last night. They have fucking 80 black spoons and like four people doing the dubs for these 80 fucking people. So they all fucking sound the same. And not only that, when they were doing the dubbing, they would have the background volume. And then when there was a line to be dubbed, they would drop all the volume. And then once the dubbing line was complete, they'd pump the volume back up again. So the volume kept going. And then the thing that annoyed me the most was they dubbed the exclamations. Like, oh, wow, wow, motherfucker, it sounds the same in Korean or in fucking English. You don't need to dub this shit. She glared at me enough that I left the room after about 3 minutes because I was not shutting the fuck up about how much I thought this was absolutely asinine.
Yeah, the dubbing was bad. You need to listen to the original Korean and just use
subtitles. Yeah. So as you can tell, it kind of annoyed me.
So on the last episode, Adrian and I discussed Queensland's new hate speech laws.
Yeah, I was actually just researching that and I watched that Instagram video you sent and I heard many phrases. I don't even remember if I heard the phrase, but I'm like, what the fuck could they be saying that would be so offensive? So I did a Google search and I read the phrase and I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. I mean, I can understand kind of, sort of, that what Hamas has used that as part of their slogan since, what, 2017, I think is what I read. But, like, Come on. And the fact that this extremely popular Australian pop song from what, the 80s, the 90s?
Released in 1988, titled Two Strong Hearts.
It certainly sounded like the 80s. And I did see a picture of the guy, and he looked like fucking Flock of Seagulls. That hair looked very 80s to me.
Yeah, John Farnham would go on a tour one last time across Australia several times.
Oh, one of those.
I've got an article here from Australia's ABC that describes the context in which people can be charged under these new laws.
I read the law. You can't say the phrase in a way that people will feel threatened by it. But I don't know if you may have to bleep this out or not, but like, we're going to be looking to get offended no matter what.
Well, it seems everybody thinks this law is stupid, even if you don't believe Palestine should be a state or don't believe the response to the atrocities of October 7, 2023 was a genocide like me. So on Friday afternoon, April 17, there was a flash mob in King George Square, which is right in front of Town Hall in the centre of Brisbane. 300 to 400 people dressed up like Fonzie in 1988 and danced and sang along to Two Strong Hearts, complete with saxophones and various other 80s paraphernalia. I wish Queensland Premier Chris Ofoli would stick his censorship legislation right up his Chris Ofoli ass, where it's Chris Ofoli shit 24/7.
That flash mob of people dancing and fake playing saxophones with blonde mullet wigs on, those just look like silly people. Sure, they were waving a Palestine flag, and if a Palestine flag makes you feel threatened, you're a pussy.
Especially when you protest in such a spectator-friendly way. King George Square doesn't block traffic. There's heaps of space for people to move around. It was right on peak hour, but nobody gave a fuck. It was fine. It didn't bother anybody.
Assholes are always ruining things for normal people. Hamas took this phrase, which in and of itself is very innocuous and has been used all over the place, but now they fucked it up for people in Australia because they're assholes.
As usual, it just makes me wonder, why do we even have cops? They're arresting Jewish people for contravening these new laws when they're supposed to be protecting them. What are you doing?
Here, if you see somebody pulled over by a cop, you don't see somebody pulled over by a cop. You see somebody pulled over by like six cops. There'll be like three fucking cruisers behind them for no reason other than they didn't have anything else to do.
Aren't there some real crimes they could go and investigate?
Yeah.
About two women every week are killed in Australia because of spousal violence. Men just can't seem to keep their emotions under control. Women drive them up the wall that hard. We've got a problem. Why can't we go and fight that? In my building, there was a sign put up in the elevator the other day that encourages every person in the building to go and take a free gender-based violence course online. What the fuck, Australia? What are you doing? That's the stuff you should go and fight, but I don't really see how a course is going to help.
Most of my life, I've leaned towards the ACAB attitude towards cops. And lately, over the last few years, I have a much stronger inclination to just say, fuck all pigs. I don't see them doing anything useful, and I see them being a tool of the state to oppress. So,
my sister was a cop.
Oh, yeah?
But I tend to agree, Jones.
Well, I have a relative married to a cop, someone that I'm really close to, and I'm like, yeah, how do I deal with this? And then they're getting divorced, so I'm like, oh, thank you. That solved that dilemma in my brain. You're divorced. Okay. Well, hey, fuck you, pig. You know, whatever. I was listening to the podcast you and Adrian did, and well, I did read that the young lady that had that phrase on her shirt who got arrested was released without charge.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
So I wonder if that's what's going to happen to these protesters they picked up. They threw them in the back of a paddy wagon to get the photo op, and then they're going to quietly release them without charge. Maybe. I don't know.
We can only hope.
Yeah. You're talking about how you guys don't really have freedom of speech laws like we have, like we had here in the States. Fascism, one of the first things they do is restrict free speech.
How is free speech being restricted in the US right now?
Well, I mean, going after the press, attacking the press verbally, suing them, trying to make them afraid, getting sycophants in as the heads of the media companies, the heads of the news companies. You know, they're trying to kind of backdoor it up to the point where then they'll have enough control that they can just say, you have to get our approval for news stories report. And they'll just be another propaganda arm. Like the person that took over in charge of CBS News.
Barry Weiss?
Barry Weiss, yes. She seems to be like one of those lesbians that is like, okay, yeah, we'll be against trans people so that you don't come after us normal gay people. Forgetting the fact that the right-wingers, they don't see a real fucking difference. They hate anything that's not the nuclear family, one man, one woman, unless you're, you know, Mormon, and 2.5 kids. It's appeasement that is going to backfire. But, you know, also, it could just be she's just trying to make money. You know, she's just grifting, just like all the rest of them are just grifting. But I don't know.
I hit max news saturation with Trump flip-flopping all over the place on Iran. I just couldn't take it anymore. I have to take a break. It's like listening to more of this isn't going to make me more knowledgeable about anything that's happening.
Whatever they're going to say today is going to change story. You know, yesterday they said, oh, we've opened the Strait of Hormuz. And then today they're like, we've closed the Strait of Hormuz. That's happened like 5 or 6 times now. It's like, the fuck, man. I just avoid all of it. I don't watch TV. I will, you know, flip through the headlines and see what's going on. But if I get too involved in it, depending on the season and depending on what's going on in my life, sometimes if I get too deep into it, I will just be in a months long depression / anxiety storm. And it's just like, I can't deal with this. And when I'm like that, then I'm a real joy for my wife to be around. She's like, okay, yeah, I know everything sucks, but could you stop just saying everything sucks? That's all you're saying. Can you say something other than that?
Well, the news can really affect you sometimes. I guess because it's about real things that are happening to real people. Bondi affected me. I remember being in the kitchen after Christy told me all the details about it and just needing to go and watch something happy to get my mind off it. It was depressing.
Yeah. How far away is Bondi from you?
It's a state away.
That's what I thought, yeah.
But
still,
it's somewhere where I've actually been. I've walked along the beach at Bondi. I've been there.
Yeah.
Hearing news like that about something that I'm familiar with was just shocking. It felt so un-Australian and so close, even though I was technically pretty far away.
And you're not the States where that kind of shit happens fucking every week. So it's a bigger thing for you guys.
Yeah, you're right. In the United States, you have a Bondi level tragedy just about every day, it seems.
Yeah. Well, we have to preserve the Second Amendment. For what? There's a fucking fascist government takeover right now. And where are you, all you gun humpers? Where are you, ammosexuals? Come on. I thought you were here to stand up against tyrannical governments. Oh, you like this tyrannical government, so you're fucking tosser, ass clown, fuck faces.
Well, let's move on to roasting episode 29 of the Latter-day Saints History podcast titled Saints.
Every time you say history, I feel compelled that I need to put air quotes. An LDS history podcast. The thing about history in the Mormon church is that any history has to be based on approved sources, which is stuff that Mormon prophets, Mormon leaders have said. You're not supposed to go looking at outside sources unless you can use that outside source to prove what your conclusion is already. You do everything backwards. You pray and the still small voice speaks to you in your heart and tells you what's real. Facts don't matter when the spirit is involved.
I wonder what Smitty's inner voice was telling him.
Hey, you should go fuck that dude's wife and say God wants you to do it.
Well, let's introduce the talking heads on episode 29 of the Saints podcast. First, we've got, of course, the host, Ben Godfrey. And in this episode, Joseph Smith does something so unbecoming to being like a prophet that I think that Ben Godfrey's shelf almost breaks in real time.
Yeah, you're telling me about that.
Did his shelf break? Who knows? I'll leave that up to you to determine. Then we've got Alex Smith, an historian with the Joseph Smith Papers. And Shaylin Back. She was on the last episode, I believe, and she's the token woman. They've got to put a woman in there. Doesn't matter what her credentials are. She's just had a chance to read the first volume of Saints, and they just like to mix it in there. Now, it's great that they're giving women a voice, but it's just kind of like, why is she there? We've got a historian, in air quotes, as Jones would like to say, and we've got the host. Arguably, he doesn't really have any qualifications either. And then we've got Shaylin Back, another person without any qualifications. I guess that evens out. We've got a historian and two people without qualifications. If they really wanted to keep it even, we could make Alex Smith androgynous. I mean, with a name like that, he could go that way. And he's got the surname of the prophet.
I hate these fuckers' voices.
I do too, Jones. I'm always editing it in some way. Why am I spending so much time trying to make them sound better? Maybe I just don't want to hear it sound so nasally and shit if I've got to listen to these voices over and over and over again. I mean, sometimes I even split the different voices onto different tracks because I'm doing different multi-band compression for each voice. This is how much their podcast gets to me. It's not just about the history. It's not just about the religion. It's about the fucking audio engineering, for fuck's sake. Why can't you fucking do anything right? You got shit tons of money. You can buy temples all over the world. You're buying up my country for grazing land. And now you fucking produce this horseshit? I can hear where they've done a bad edit and chopped something out. And it's probably just something boring that needed to be chopped out for time.
Yeah, it's probably where they said something that they shouldn't have, and their editor's like, oh, no, you can't say that about Joe. You can't tell the truth. No, oh, no. Oh, you just mentioned that Joseph fucked a 14-year-old. No, we have to cut that out. No, can't say that.
Right. It's like, we dealt with that in the Gospel Topics essay, so no more thought needed, right? Wrong.
Yeah, behind about four or five different links you have to follow through before you finally get to it. And she was in her 15th year. That means she was 14, you dumb motherfucker.
Well, here's the first clip. Vanish on the magic word, habeas corpus.
On the 6th of May in 1842, Lilburn Boggs was in his home in Independence, Missouri, and was shot from an assailant in the alleyway outside his home. He had been the one responsible for the famous extermination order, driving the Saints out of northern Missouri in 1838 and 39. Fingers started pointing to Joseph Smith, assuming that he had told the now famous Orrin Porter Rockwell to go and kill Boggs, none of which, of course, was substantiated. Lilburn Boggs issues an affidavit saying that he believes Joseph is responsible. That triggers a requisition attempt by Missouri's current governor, Thomas Reynolds. He then sends a requisition to Illinois' current governor, Thomas Carlin, who actually issues the arrest warrant for Joseph. These officers show up in Nauvoo on the 8th of August, intending to arrest Rockwell and Joseph, who immediately take advantage of the legal tool of habeas corpus. Habeas corpus never results in a trial. It always results in a hearing. So it can never result in a verdict, for instance, of not guilty. It can't exonerate someone or find someone innocent. It doesn't look at the charges. All it looks is at the actual arrest itself.
There's this bit that I chopped out of the clip for brevity, where they were trying to find other haters of ex-Governor Boggs based on political reasons.
Well, yeah, of course they are. They're trying to make it seem like there are so many other reasonable explanations. You are being ridiculous for ever suspecting that Joseph Smith, who is pure as the snow, could possibly ever try and get somebody killed.
Like, of course he's going to have people that disagreed with him on political issues and how he managed the state. but he wasn't the governor anymore. Why would they still want to kill him? I don't really feel like that was very convincing.
Right.
In this next clip, we meet J.C. Bennett, and we discover a person who's just like Joseph Smith, going from town to town. When something collapses in one town, he'll move on to the next and con the next lot of people. Just a traveling con man, traveling salesman, doesn't matter what he's selling. And he likes to fuck a lot too. And he likes to incorporate. He has lots of experience in incorporation. I don't know why the town needs to incorporate. What the fuck does incorporating mean anyway? How do you do that with a town? Maybe the state doesn't give it an official status if it's not incorporated. I don't know, but he apparently had lots of experience in this, or maybe he just liked to say that he had lots of experience in it because he is a con man after all. Anyway, without further ado, J.C. Bennett incorporates.
John C. Bennett, he actually became Nauvoo's first mayor when the city was incorporated. Bennett had been the quartermaster general of the Illinois State Militia. He had had experience in politics and in incorporation of different organizations. Bennett was instrumental in helping lobby to get Nauvoo's charter passed by the Illinois legislature. Not only that, he also ends up becoming a counselor in the church's first presidency within about half a year of becoming a member of the church, but then has a very public fall from grace within the church. There's an interest in determining whether he is a legitimate Mason in good standing. It came to light that he actually had been expelled from a charge in Ohio, the Pickaway Lodge. Plural marriage, of course, is rolling out quietly with only a few people being introduced to it. And Bennett takes advantage of that lack of awareness. Others are following his lead. And so there's a high council movement trying to investigate Bennett and some of these other men. When it becomes public that he's been cut off from the church, he immediately starts writing accusations against Joseph and the church. They end up being published all over the country, culminating in a book, which becomes really the second major anti-Mormon book.
They're alluding that J.C. Bennett was taking advantage of the fact that people didn't know about plural marriage. They didn't carry that whole thought out because the rollout of plural marriage was Joseph and a select other few fucking other dudes' wives and people they weren't married to. Bennett was doing the exact same shit that Joseph and co. were doing. But the fact that he was doing it not as cautiously and the people that he was going after were not as brainwashed to believe that he had the heavenly mandate to be doing this stuff, so it was getting out and therefore coming back on Joseph. That, I suspect, is the main reason that Bennett got in trouble, because he was causing there to be increased scrutiny on what Joseph was doing, exposing him when he hadn't come up with some bullshit explanation for it.
You mean apart from that vision from God that he made up, that commanded him to fuck other women?
Right. He was just saying, hey, an angel says if you don't fuck me, he's going to kill me with a flaming sword.
I've titled this clip, Joseph and His Amazing Technicolor Character, because that's really all he had going for him as a con man. Ah, oh, so likable. Flip-flopping all over the place to whatever will do anything for him. Maybe he didn't really have a character or a personality.
I just kind of want to reach out to Joseph and say, don't wait. This guy is not going to be good. But he wavers for a minute, and he kind of doesn't expose him right away.
I think that the story of John C. Bennett and Joseph and their relationship is insightful into Joseph Smith's character and personality. Joseph ends up not only keeping Bennett's excommunication quiet initially, but acts as Bennett's defense with the Masonic Lodge and with the church leaders. I think it's a great example of Joseph Smith seeing his potential and offering him an opportunity to sincerely repent. Even after Bennett has started extreme anti-Mormon writings, Joseph Smith writes, I was his friend, I am yet his friend, as I am a friend to all the sons of Adam.
Perhaps just more forgiving and more aware of what people's value really is. than I'm capable of seeing, just as an average person.
No.
I think Ben Godfrey's being a little optimistic there.
Yes, very much too optimistic.
Once again, it's a podcast about Mormon history that we just can't unentangle from Freemasonry.
Right, which is hilarious that they're acknowledging this because, of course, you know, the entire time I was growing up, there is no connection between Mormonism and Masonry. And anybody who says that is an anti-Mormon evil jackass. And now they're just talking openly about how Joseph was a Mason. And of course he was Mason. Yeah. But don't you dare imply that Joseph ripped off the temple ceremonies from Masonry. Blech. It's so
hypocritical.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not just old-time Mormonism that thought that Freemasonry was evil. In the churches that I grew up in, most of them thought Freemasonry was anything from not great to purely satanic and demon possession.
Which is idiotic. It's not satanic. It's a bunch of rich boys from the 1700s who got together and wanted to have a fancy make-believe club.
Don't you just love how Joseph says that he's a friend to all men? What a joke. He's a friend to all men, as long as he's getting something out of it.
Yeah, I'm a friend of them, so I can eventually fuck their wife / daughter / mother /
I think he just recognized the game in Bennett and knew that if he went too strong too soon, he was going to be in a whole world of pain. I mean, he ended up in a whole world of pain anyway over it, but
I think maybe Joseph Smith and Donald Trump are cut from the same cloth. They don't like the attention being anywhere but on them. But also, they both get mad when somebody calls attention to the fucked up shit that they're doing. Joseph Smith was like, oh, I like this guy, but also he's getting attention. And also I'm having increased scrutiny for the shit he's doing. So yeah, sure. He was great and wonderful. And I called him my brother and all that. But now we're just going to cut him off.
This fourth clip I've titled, It Takes Two to Tango. So the men were conniving and manipulative, but women are pretty wise up to men's tactics too, right? I'm guessing there was something they were getting out of sleeping with him. Maybe it's just an agreement made in hell.
When these accusations start surfacing, not only about Bennett, but that he and others have seduced some of these women, there are also investigations into members of the Relief Society. I think it's important to remember that Joseph, when he speaks to the society, he instructs them and reminds them to be forgiving and to recognize that these women are not at fault for being manipulated, rather to be charitable, one of the foundational mores of the institution.
Be forgiving and let them come in, because if you think too much about what happened to them, you'll realize the same shit happened to you.
Not exactly the same. Apparently, Bennett didn't marry his hookups.
Here in the United States, you've only ever been able to marry one person at a time. So the women in the Relief Society were made up of Joseph's concubines. None of these were his wives, but yeah, that's the parlance they used. It was the exact same structure of having a sneaky affair.
That's a bit of the pot calling the kettle black, isn't it?
That's exactly what it was. But the pot was also claiming that the chef said he could do whatever he wanted, so he had permission. Fuckhead McGee did not.
So I've titled this next clip, Joseph Wears Many Hats. He's all about hats.
He wore them in many unusual and non-orthodox ways.
I mean, sometimes he's talking from a hat, which is where this podcast got its mascot and logo from, a book appearing out of a hat, because that's where he transcribed the Book of Mormon from. He seems to have a thing with hats.
I think it's interesting that in Nauvoo, we have an explosion of available records to us created by Joseph and other church members. And yet it can actually be difficult to come to know who Joseph Smith was simply because he employs so many clerks and scribes. He's so busy. A prophet and a father, of course, but also the city's mayor, the head of the municipal court, a store owner, a farm owner, a newspaper editor, the largest land speculator in the area. He's wearing all these different hats. And so when he is in hiding during fall of 1842, it gives him an opportunity to reflect that otherwise we don't see. It's these same weeks that generate what are now known as sections 127 and 128 of the Doctrine and Covenants, these letters that he writes while in hiding.
He wore a lot of hats so that he could shield himself. Like, he was the head judge. He was the mayor. He was doing that so he could have a pretense of saying, no, you can't do that. You can't extradite me because I say so. And have the legal framework to actually base that on.
I think Joseph liked his holiday away. He just wanted to be looked after by someone and not have to do any hard work. And he's not in his shop selling anything. He's hiding from the law and being totally provided for. And he can just sit there and pretend to pray and write down his thoughts.
I think he liked both being the one that everybody had to obey. But yeah, I think he also did mind hiding out and not having to come up with bullshit 24/7. He just needed a break, maybe.
Yeah, he needed a break from all the drama. All he wants to do is just fuck some pretty ladies, although if you look at some of his wives, Jesus Christ, what the fuck was he doing? And just be left alone. But no, they won't leave him alone. They're trying to kill him. In the Saints episode, they spoke a fair bit about this early politician and lawyer called Nathaniel Pope. And I think he was the judge later in the episode when Smitty gets his hearing. Do you know anything about Nathaniel Pope? I'd never heard of him before.
No, I don't.
Maybe he's only famous in Illinois.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, well, let's listen to this last clip that I've got. I've titled it Springfield Pantomime because it really was such a sideshow. So this is Smitty finally getting his habeas corpus hearing that was mentioned in the first clip. It was already decided beforehand. He's been in hiding for a while being looked after. Oh, he's going to come out now to huge fanfare. People are going to love him or hate him. They don't really know what to think about him, but they want to see him. He's like the attraction at a state fair, the traveling religious freak show.
So Joseph thought that for sure extradition to Missouri would mean his death. But that changes with the election of a new Illinois governor. He kind of assures Joseph, if you give yourself up, I've polled the Supreme Court justices of Illinois and they've assured me that you will be discharged. Then with that kind of assurance, have what becomes a very famous hearing. It draws the attention and interest of all the people locally. The Illinois House of Representatives breaks session when Joseph arrives in town. He was a celebrity. Whether people liked him or not, they were all interested. The courtroom was filled to capacity. It was in the same building that Abraham Lincoln's law office would be housed only a few months later. Lincoln's new bride, Mary Todd, was one of the attendees for all 3 days of Joseph's hearing. The famous Nathaniel Pope is presiding, surrounded on the bench by 9 women, at least on one day, one of whom is Mary Todd Lincoln. And some of the apostles that joined him on the trip, Willard Richards and others. And so Joseph's attorney, his opening remarks, I find myself in the curious position of standing here before the Pope, pointing at Nathaniel Pope, surrounded by angels, referring to the women sitting next to him, defending the prophet in the presence of his apostles. You know,
they don't really like him. They don't really hate him. He's just a celebrity and people want to come and see what's going on. There was a bit I cut out. Some person commented, oh, he's too smiley to be a prophet. Or look at his prominent nose.
Yeah.
It just goes to show he was famous, not necessarily attractive.
Exactly. He's a con man and he's been fucking somebody else's wife.
Question for you, Jones. Do you think Joseph was behind the shooting of former Governor Boggs?
You know what? Porter Rockwell had quite the reputation of being a hothead. So it is certainly not unbelievable that he may have just decided to do it. But also, here in Utah, Brigham would put out hits on people all the time, you know, within the church. So you can say, well, that was just Brigham, or maybe Brigham was just following the example set by Joseph. I don't think there is any way to know for certain, so I can't say for certain, but I would not be shocked or surprised if Joseph had ordered it, and I would not be shocked or surprised if Porter thought he was doing Joseph a favor and did it himself. I would be a little surprised if one of his political enemies had done it, because Boggs very publicly went against Joseph Smith and the Mormons and said, get the fuck out of the state or you will die. You know, the Mormons consider that to be absolutely horrible. So they would, I think, feel justified in attacking him. Barely not a good shot, though. So I don't know.
I don't know about that. He shot him in the head, apparently.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He shot him in the head, but not good enough.
Well, if we've learned anything from U.S. military action over the years, he should have double-tapped it.
Yeah, well, he would be standing outside the window with the ramrod, pour the powder in, put the ball in, pack it. You know, it would take too long.
What he should have done was bring two guns and have them both ready to go.
That's what he should have. Double-packing.
I mean, at this point, you could say it's downright un-American to not double-tap it.
Probably.
Jones, tell me how the midterms are going.
If they happen, hopefully the shellacking that seems to be the way things are going continues to happen. Because, I mean, there have been a number of special elections, like, you know, seats that were vacated before their terms were over. And so they had to have special elections. And the Democrats have been doing really well in that. And so if Trump doesn't do something to just declare, you know, the midterms not happening, or, you know, erases half of the votes or something like that, then we're going to have a whole bunch of Democrats and they will somehow fuck it up. They'll fuck it up.
Tell me in what way you think they'll fuck it up.
Well, the problem is the Democrats, they talk big, but then when it comes time to actually do it, they fucking cave. They cave, they quit. They're all establishment. They're more worried about maintaining their personal power as opposed to doing the right thing. So, you know, I am very pessimistic about the whole thing. I think it'll probably get canceled or interfered with. If it doesn't, then, okay, we may have a majority in the Senate or the House or whatever it is. And then I expect the Democrats to not do what they need to do to get this motherfucker out of there. I think they're just going to write a few strongly worded letters and things are going to continue. I think that hopefully if they did get in, instead of things just tumbling farther into the pit, it'll at least slow down a bit. I think that might be the best we can expect, is that if the Democrats win, it'll slow the decay down and he'll have less permission and there'll be more pushback against some of the shit he's doing.
I thought Donald Trump's approval rating was in the toilet right now, like almost the worst ever.
Yeah, he has the lowest approval rating since they started keeping track of that sort of shit, which, you know, they didn't do for the first while. But yeah, I mean, he's batshit insane and incompetent and not doing his job. So he's got a low approval rating. But also the Supreme Court has just kind of handed it to him. So
they didn't hand him his tariffs and they didn't hand him the birthright citizenship ruling.
They didn't hand that one to him. But maybe it's because they couldn't figure out a way to hand it to him without looking like they were handing it. I don't know. I don't trust any of these motherfuckers. I think they're all complete and absolute assholes. They are all immoral and they all only give a shit about themselves. So whoever gets elected, if they are not, well, hell, even the underdog, you know, Graham Platner, is that his name? The oyster farmer from Maine who, oops, we found out he's got some Nazi shit in his background and he likes to say the R word. And it's like, the people that run for office as a general rule are complete and absolute trash. So
Gigi reckons that I should run for some kind of public office, but I'm not really sure that you can make the world a better place with politics.
I was talking to my boys this morning. And I was like, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, anybody who is seeking to be in power is the kind of person you don't want to be in power.
Yeah, I don't think I'd fit in with those assholes.
Would you want to? These guys are all fuckheads. You don't want to fit in with the fuckheads.
I'm just not that convinced that being part of the solution actually is a thing when it comes to politics. I think you just become part of the omelet.
Yeah,
Wasn't it Winston Churchill that said democracy is the worst form of government except for all those other forms?
Well, the problem is that we're all convinced that there's nothing better, and so we don't actually seek after something better. I think we're all dead in the next 50 years anyway. Whatever.
There's been a lot of news lately about prediction markets, betting platforms, but we don't call it betting, at least in the United States, so it sidesteps all the laws somehow. Anyway, apparently there's been insider trading happening.
Including people in Trump's cabinet who know what the fuck he's going to do next and making bank off of it. Yeah. And getting away with it because they're doing it on fucking online betting places.
If you had to make a prediction market bet on whether there'll be boots on the ground in Iran, what would you bet on?
The war is already so unpopular that if they were to go and put boots on the ground there, I think that might actually trigger the 25th Amendment. I think they might actually just try to get him right the fuck out for being incompetent. So I think that it'll just keep going nowhere. I think we're stuck in a quagmire right now while asshole is golfing or fucking going to UFC fights, holding hands with Dana White.
Who's Dana White?
Dana White is the head of the UFC. He's a big, bald, dumb fucker. They were walking into the arena while Trump was getting booed. And I think from what I read, Trump, his steps were unsteady because he's an old man who needs to die now. And Dana White was holding his hand and helping him into the arena.
Oh, I like your t-shirt, by the way.
Oh, thanks. I got this one a while ago. I first saw a picture of David Tennant wearing this shirt. And then there's this YouTube series that I watched. It's called Roll for Sandwich, where the guy rolls dice to build his lunch sandwich for that day. He rolls for bread. He rolls for the main. He rolls for the roughage. He rolls for the sauce. He rolls for wild magic, which is just, you know, crazy shit that goes on the sandwich. And he was wearing this shirt. And I was like, I really like that shirt. And actually, today I was out doing some volunteer work for Project Rainbow. Have I told you what Project Rainbow is?
I've heard you speak of Dragon Dads, but what's Project Rainbow?
Project Rainbow, basically, they put up pride flags in the fall and the spring for Trans Day of Visibility and Trans Day of Remembrance. And then for Pride Week, we go out and put, it used to be just a, you know, standard pride flag. Now it's a progressive pride flag. But anyways, one of the very first years that I did this, I almost got my ass kicked by somebody who thought I was stealing their sister's flag. Okay, and so I try and wear stuff that is very obviously pro-queer, pro-trans, so I don't get my ass kicked. So that's why I'm wearing this shirt today. But, you know, I've got a bunch of Dragon Dad shirts, and I got this shirt, and I've got a number of other ones. I don't like talking to people. I don't like interacting with people. My wife and children tell me I'm an intimidating-looking fellow.
You are intimidating, Jones.
Which, for the most part, I'm okay with, because that means people leave me the fuck alone. But I like to wear affirming shirts or, you know, affirming hats or whatever when I'm out and about. Not because I want people to think that I'm one thing or another. I just want people that belong to these marginalized communities to know that that big intimidating guy over there, he's on our side. He's a safe person to be around.
By the way, we should probably say what your shirt says, because this is an audio recording. It says, "You will have to go through me." And I didn't know it was anything to do with trans rights. I just thought it was appropriate for a fellow who is as intimidating as you.
It's really cool. I will get dirty looks, but nobody ever comes up to me and says anything about my shirt other than, "Hey man, I really love your shirt," or "Hey man, that's a really cool hat," or "Hey, thanks for wearing that shirt." And so, at least from anecdotal evidence, it seems to be doing what I wanted to do, so, you know.
Well, as usual, Jones, it's been lovely talking to you. And I can't wait to have another chat with you in the next month or three.
Good talk to you too, Patience.
See you later.
I guess this is my new normal.